on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook. The Sportscast. Expect the unexpected.
The Top 25 Rundown presented by The Sportscast.
This is the Top 25 Rundown. And here's your host, Alan West.
Good evening and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown presented by The Sportscast. Today is February 21st, 2024. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all your channels, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch.tv, and Apple Podcasts. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and review. It'll help us tremendously. We are also on DB Digital Radio. You can listen to us on your smart speaker, play Sportscast. Visit us on thesportscast.net. Also follow us on Twitter at thesportscast1 and check out our app, The Sportscast, in the iOS App Store. Hello, my name is Alan West. Welcome to another edition of the Top 25 Rundown. Today we are lucky and privileged enough to have Nicholas Hodel, graduate of Arizona State this last year, 2023, and he is now a sports writer at the Brenham Banner Press down in Brenham, Texas. Nick, how are we doing today, sir?
Oh, man, doing well. Happy to be back. It's just, I've been incredibly busy here in Brenham since we last had the chance to talk. I mean, just all the different high school sports down here in Texas, just the greatest state to cover high school sports in this country. And I feel like I've found the best community in the entire state right here in Brenham. I know I'm getting all those bases checked off early, but yeah, I mean, being here in Brenham is an absolute privilege. So, and of course, thanks for having me back on. It's been an interesting year for me, being all so busy with the high school coverage sports. So kind of getting the feet wet once again in the college scene. And man, it's been quite the year, quite the year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was checking out CBS Sports this last Saturday where they had the top 16 teams. And when I was looking at that, one of the things that I guess came out to me was seeing that Purdue was number one, UConn was number two. Then within the next two or three days, Purdue, they play Ohio State in the worst first game as a head coach. So now that Chris Holtman got fired, and they win by 4 points. And then UConn, did they play Marquette?
They beat the heck out of Marquette, and they turn around and lose to Creighton big time on the road.
Exactly.
It's funny how stuff like that happens in college basketball all the time. I mean, you think you have it figured out, and all of a sudden, oh, maybe you don't quite have it figured out. In Purdue's case, kind of an interesting thing there with Ohio State getting them. That was one of the teams I did not expect to get them. And it really makes you question what Chris Holtman was really doing with that group in the Big Ten Conference. That to me is one of the biggest things that came to my mind watching the end of that game is, man, what the heck was Holtman doing? So you get this you get the interim guy and you get them riled up to beat a top team like that. I mean, and they were doing some impressive stuff against Zach Edey. Probably one of the few times I've seen Edey truly limited. And that's really the start of it for playing against Purdue. You got to find a way to limit Edey and really get them to just have to work around their guards and not have Edey to rely on as much. So that was a terrific effort, I thought, from Ohio State. And UConn went into the week as the unanimous AP number one. And then, of course, they lose big time to Creighton. Mm-hmm. Go figure. That's exactly what this sport is predicated on, that kind of stuff happening. But really, it was a well-deserved unanimous number one for UConn. I mean, going into the week, mm-hmm. the gap, I thought, between one and two was much bigger than the gap between two and 12. You could really make that case of just UConn was by far the best in the country. And then they go out and just kind of a real stinker against Creighton on the road, a place that they have not had a lot of success at over the years for this UConn bunch. But it's really hard to beat teams in the Big East when, one, you're shooting 3 of 16 from three, two, you're allowing 50% from three and 54.7% overall from the field. It's just really hard to win top-tier basketball games like that. And Creighton's a great team, and so you get those teams together, that's exactly what it became, a top-tier basketball game in which Creighton had far, far more success than UConn. One of the true rare stinkers of a game, I would say, for that UConn bunch.
Definitely, and I actually had done some – I looked at a little bit of trivia that you might find entertaining. I checked out Ohio State's unranked at home versus top two opponents since 1987-88. What if I told you they were 7-1 all time?
Wow.
But their only loss being to North Carolina by 11. Because the first one I have is number two Purdue in 87-88. They won 71-60. 92-93, they beat number one Indiana in overtime, 81-77. 2004-2005 was the year where they couldn't go to the NCAA tournament. They played number one Illinois. They beat them 65-64. And then 2017-2018, they played number one Michigan State. They won 80-64. 2021-22, they played Duke, number one at the time, won 71-66. And then Sunday, you have Purdue, they won by four. So, I mean, that was something that kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah. Certainly a program that has the history of showing up for those big games. It's just for whatever reason going into that game against Purdue, just hadn't found a way in a Big Ten that really outside of a couple of teams is not the greatest of conferences. You have tournament quality teams mm-hmm. in there, don't get me wrong, but it's just not a high-end level conference compared to, say, the Big 12 or the SEC. And certainly you still got that level of parity, but it's still there.
Well, I mean, you saw that the beginning of the year, kind of for the Big 10, you kind of had the first upset was when JMU beat Michigan State at home to start a season opener. That hadn't happened since before that stadium opened. So, I mean, once you saw that, it's kind of been like, uh-oh, what are we going to have this year? And one thing you were talking about right before we got on, how impressive is the Mountain West Conference right now?
Yeah, out west, you rarely get a conference outside of the Power Six, the P5 plus the Big East. You rarely get a situation where a conference outside of those six is in the running for six bids. Yeah, that's exactly what we have in the Mountain West Conference. And teams like San Diego State, 19th right now in the AP, Colorado State, 22nd right there with them. Then you got teams like Utah State and New Mexico, Boise State, Nevada as well, all of them who have put together some real solid resumes here to get themselves into that conversation. All three of them are in that top 43 in net. Nevada is the 43rd. Boise State came into the day at 35th. And what you have here, all six of these teams, rather, have at least three wins in that first quadrant. And they're holding their own within that first quadrant. And hardly any of them have bad losses. Four of the six have a Q3, and none of them have a Q4 loss, which is super important for teams like this trying to get their way in an at-large. You have to avoid those bad losses. Yet for all six of them, they have the quality wins to push themselves over the edge and push themselves over that edge easily. Now, a team like Nevada may still need a little bit of help, but it's going to be really hard to take a team that has five quadrant one wins and bump them out. It's going to be real hard to do so if they keep up the trajectory that they're on. Now, in cases like Nevada and Boise State in particular, nowhere near safe. They still have a lot of work to do. But for those other four, right now you can make the case that, yeah, they are sitting pretty comfortably at the moment, as long as they don't flub their lines against some of these other teams, because the Mountain West still has their fair share of bad losses in teams like San Jose State, like Air Force, Fresno State, Wyoming. You don't want to lose really any of those teams, but as long as they don't, Mountain West is in an unbelievable spot right now to get those bids. Question really is, for that conference come March, what are you going to do with it? And we've seen the Mountain West kind of fail to get elusive tournament wins as a conference, as a collective. They got a big opportunity now. They cannot squander whatever that conference does.
Understand, and I agree about that. I mean, that's why, while I hate to kind of double back to Ohio State just because of Chris Holtmann, it felt like he lost the team. And so seeing how it is and then looking at the Mountain West, how some of those teams, how the coaches have really just instilled, hey, do your best. We're going to be okay. We're going to make an impact. And they really are right now. What's a team that you've been looking at that you think, it doesn't have to be in that conference, it can be in another conference, what's a team that you kind of are looking at and think is a sleeper coming into the tournament that maybe a lot of people may not know about?
Well, I mean, I just within the Mountain West, first off, you look at what San Diego State's done. I mean, they got to the biggest stage in college basketball last year, yet I feel like some could still be sleeping on that team for various reasons, and some of them I'm sure are completely applicable here. But you got a team that's really taking care of business, could potentially enter as a four, perhaps a five, if they kind of stay on the trajectory that they're on. What they're going to do with that, I'm going to find very interesting to see what they end up doing with that kind of position. You look a little bit further down to where bracketologists have the field projected at the moment, and FAU sitting right there. They have the pieces. They just have put together in a very intriguing kind of resume to where they've taken a few losses in the second quadrant that people have viewed as bad losses, though they are in that second quadrant. Really the big concern at a conference, loss to Bryant in Florida Gulf Coast. That really has this FAU team sitting down at the moment towards that eight line, when really otherwise it's not a terrible resume overall. They're still in that top 35 in net. They still got the pieces back from their Final Four run a year ago. A lot of pressure is on them, more so I would think than the year before. And one of the other teams that I found quite interesting is Washington State, a team that in the Pac-12, a very weak Pac-12, mind you, where right now you look at the conference and it could very well only be two bids. This is the second right here in the Cougars of Washington State. And they have done a fantastic job over the last month in getting the wins they need. Road quality quad one wins at Washington, at Oregon have been big for them. Also beating Colorado and Utah, two teams that have a lot of work to do to try and get in the tournament. That'll be something to watch with both of those teams. But I really feel like for this Washington State team, they are doing everything they need to at the right time, getting into the AP Top 25 for a program. This is a major accomplishment, and they have done that. And they are just playing their way into a fantastic spot that program's not been in quite some time.
Definitely true. Since we're on the topic of the Pac-12, I did see that the Pac-12 commissioner has told the Pac-12 he is, I guess they've decided to cut their losses and say goodbye to him. Georgia, trying to say his last name,
Kliklof. Yeah, a little late from the cut their losses. I hate to cut you off, but just a tad late there, guys.
Exactly. Now, the funny thing was, apparently, the schools told him to up the offer to $50K when they were going to try and do it at $32 million. And, well, that didn't go well at all.
Yeah, I still don't know how they screwed. They just misread the market that much. I still don't know how that happened, but for the Pac-12's sake, it's kind of sad as someone who is a second-generation Arizona State graduate and kind of grew up on the good games in what was then the Pacific 10 has now become the Pacific 12. over the last decade plus with Colorado and Utah.
Yep.
And I mean, it's sad. I mean, it really is. Like, it's going to be real weird seeing ASU play conference games in this state of Texas. I mean, that's kind of what we're working with here for Arizona State next year. They're playing conference games in Texas. That's going to be a little, that's going to be a new one for sure. And that Big 12, which is going to be so tough for Arizona State. It's going to be so tough. I just don't know the path for Arizona State to succeed under the current regime when really this year has not gone the plan with bringing in transfers and trying to mesh them together. ASU's not the only one. Other teams are falling for the same thing too. Arkansas is probably the most notable of that, to where you try to put together a whole lineup of transfers together and it just doesn't work. You have to have the cohesiveness there. And I think that's something that I think maybe a few coaches have lost in this transfer portal era where it's been so free and so open. And especially in a sport like basketball where the roster size is smaller, so you can try to put together a whole team through transfers. It just doesn't work. You have to have the cohesiveness there. And it's just so hard to build that when you're bringing in 5, 6, 7 transfers and trying to mesh them all together within the summer. It's really hard to do that. And so many teams have learned that lesson the hard way. ASU's up there. Like I said earlier, Arkansas, the most notable of that example. And sure, you can bring in 1 or 2 or 3, mesh them well, and it works. And several teams have done that to great success. I mean, just look at teams like Arizona who have been able to find a few pieces from the portal and they've made it work. But otherwise, it's kind of one of those catch-22 where the portal can be great, but if you abuse it too much, use it too much, it just isn't going to help you out in the long run.
I mean, that's definitely well said. It's kind of made me think of, if you were going to do like a pro comparison, I would say when the Lakers got Karl Malone and Gary Payton, thinking they were going to win the title, then they got knocked out in the second round before even the conference championship. So that was that. And then did you see that the NCAA president, how he kind of he made his, I'll put it carefully, he made his displeasure known about how things are right now. It really just, I don't really feel like a lot of people are going to have much of a vote of confidence for the NCAA much longer, honestly, just because it feels like they're making all the wrong choices, and then when they actually need to do something, they're refusing to do it in a quick time frame.
Yeah, they're out of their depth. I'll just put that straight. They're out of their depth. Between the inconsistency in decisions, the time it takes to get some of these things processed, Arizona State is still waiting on its sanctions from the Herm Edwards era, by the way. Let's get that clear. They're still waiting on a decision. They're still waiting. It boggles my mind how it could take so long, but that's besides the point. I just do, with NIL being such a big deal and state governments trying to do their own thing and the NCAA trying to go to Congress to try to get something done, because when you got to get something done, you go to Congress, right? Obviously. They're out of their depth. And it's just one of those things to where there's other things too that I'm worried about from the NCAA, like them trying to expand the NCAA tournament. Please no. God no. Don't do that. And some conference commissioners trying to get rid of automatic qualifiers and completely change the system. Please don't do that. They don't realize how much the current system benefits them. And if they try to overhaul it too much, how much it's going to destroy them. I don't think they realize it. They're just worried about the short-term dollar when not realizing that the long-term effects are going to be an absolute disaster. And as someone who loves this college basketball, loves March Madness, you start to take some of this stuff away, I start to change some of it, you're going to lose a lot of people. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, not if they make these crazy changes they're talking about. I just don't understand what their process is, probably the short-term dollar. But they're going to end up losing a lot of people over this, and that's a shame because I can't think of a bigger American institution in sports other than March Madness that people are considering tinkering with way too much and trying to destroy it in its current iteration. I can't think of it. sure, other leagues are dealing with their own problems of chasing the dollar when they really shouldn't be, and they should be trying to stick with what works, but nothing like some of the proposed changes that the NCAA is trying to make. It's ridiculous. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, seeing how the college football playoff, they just got to 12, and now they're thinking about changing it again, and it's just like, come on now, let's wait and see how this goes, and it's waiting. It feels like they're really just going too far already, like you said, and, well, since I know that you're a huge college basketball fan, I know you know Draymond Green played at Michigan State when he went to college. Did you see what he posted earlier this week?
I did not, know.
Okay, so Draymond Green, who went to Michigan State on Michigan's national championship, they got to give that trophy back. That's why Jim Harbaugh got out of there. That's reported from Mike Curtis.
Oh.
I mean, where, like, he's a basketball player. And if it's if a basketball player is going to call out the football team like that and the coach like that, I mean, that's pretty bad, at least in my opinion. I could be wrong, but.
Yeah, nothing like good old rivalry beef, right? Nothing like
that.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit I am an Ohio State fan, and this was very tough to see. But the thing is, watching how it went down and how the NCAA tried to say that they were legitimate national champions. Yeah, if they're champions, I'm going to say it like this. Arizona has oceanfront property that I'm going to buy. I think we know the answer to that question, or that statement.
Yeah, very much so. Yep.
Now, like you say, now you cover high school basketball in Texas, so you've seen how games can get kind of ugly, and I saw that there was a little fight earlier this week in the Southland Conference between Texas A&M and Commerce and Incarnate Word. I mean, yeah. I'm all for competition, but just seeing how they had that fight, you saw that there were 8 people that were suspended. 4 from each team, they were suspended for flagrant unsportsmanlike actions. And Texas A&M, they had 3 players suspended for 3 games, and another was suspended for 1 game. For Incarnate Word, they had 1 scheduled suspended for 3 games, and the other 3 are suspended for 2. Earlier this year, did you see the Liberty and New Mexico State game?
I did not, but I'm trying. I think I remember the incident you're going to bring up, oddly enough.
Fans punched in the nose.
Yeah, that was not pretty at all. And it's just one of those things to where, when you see something like that in person, like, it kind of changes you a little bit. Like, the brawl I saw in December was ugly. I mean, it was just, and the Brandon Myers team did the right thing in putting in protocols in place to prevent stuff like that from happening. But it's just, brawls are never fun to see, witness. It's sure, some people may take enjoyment in seeing some of this stuff, but it's never good to see on the floor. It's never good. Mm-hmm. And when stuff like that happens, it's ugly. That's probably the best word I could use to describe it. It gets ugly, and it does so really fast.
Absolutely. And I mean, it almost feels like some of the situations we're having with, like, the NIL and just how that's changing and just how the college sports atmosphere is changing. I don't want to say that we're moving toward more of those incidents, but I think it's going to be a lot harder to try to avoid some of those incidents just because you're going to probably expect to hear trash talking happening in a lot of the games. Sometimes they're really just going to take it too far, but that's just how it feels like right now.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I'm not sure you can make the direct correlation there. What I do feel like the correlation there can be made is they're just kind of like seeing a brawl happen is very similar to what's happened with NIL. Like once it starts, it's really hard to rein it in, and that's what a brawl is when it happens. Like once it starts, it gets really hard to rein some of that stuff in. And as far as perhaps more of that in the future, I don't know if that's the fairest way to say that. Mainly because, and part of it too is you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old guys. I mean, some of this stuff, tempers are going to flare. It's going to happen. That's part of it. These guys are still young. They're still in college. They're still learning through. They're still growing. You know, that's part of it. But it takes a real good coach to kind of get people to just keep their heads in the game. And there have been a few instances where that just has not happened. The Incarnate Word one is a great example. Probably the ugliest example, not just this year, but maybe in recent memory, of just the number of players getting involved and the number of punches being thrown. And that might be one of the uglier ones we've seen in recent memory.
That's true. Yeah, no, I watched the video last night, I think. And I mean, normally for brawls, you see that they're done within a few seconds, whereas this one is basically a few minutes. Even then, the security guards and some of the teammates are having all they could handle just trying to stop anything worse from happening. And that just, I don't say it's scary, but it's, how about frustrating? How about that? We'll say frustrating just because you always want everyone to do the best that they can. And just to see when you're trying to say, hey, good job, congratulations on the win, and all of a sudden you just see the brawl happen, and it's like, well, that's not really how you want to end a game. And hopefully the teams are able to grow from that and do better, but that just, that's one way to end a game, but it's not the way I'd want to end a game.
Yeah, one of the ways to end it, and you never want to see it like that. You just don't.
Now, with you doing high school sports, I assume you're probably staying relatively busy doing focusing on recruiting in the area.
So I am at, so really my position here takes me to a couple of different high schools pretty regularly here in Brenham and also down the road in Burton, also within Washington County. So being very hyper local as we are, it's not a, how do I word this? We get high profile recruits, but I'm not necessarily looking at the grand scheme of things. I am still the beat reporter of the Brenham Cubs, the Brenham Cadets, Burton Panthers, Burton Lady Panthers. And we have our fair share of talented athletes here. Just one of them, just a freshman right now, Jacoby Dixon, the football side. He's getting Big 12 offers left, right, and center. And this dude is really good at that running back spot. That's a guy I'm looking forward to covering the next three falls within the Texas high school football scene, which blew my mind year one seeing some of these stadiums. I mean, it's unbelievable some of the stadiums some of these places have. Like Bryan and Merrill Green Stadium is one of the better ones I've seen. Way down near Louisiana and Port Neches Groves, that stadium's also one of the better ones I've seen. And some of them very much do rival what you would see at Division II or maybe even some smaller FCSs. I mean, it's unreal the type of stadiums we're talking about, but that's beside the point. There are several talented athletes among multiple sports who have signed in Division I, and some of them I'm seeing now, some of them I saw in the fall, but in any case, it's still an honor to be able to cover athletes like that so closely. Compared to perhaps bigger papers, you have a much wider range of schools to cover. I'm really here covering a couple of schools and really one of them with a hyper focus, and that's here in Brenham. And that's where I've grown pretty close to some of the coaches I cover, and even some of the players have taken me pretty well as well. And it's stuff like that. It's kind of changed my perspective a little bit on what it means to cover such a tight-knit, small community like this. It's an honor, it's a privilege, and it's a huge responsibility. And perhaps even more rewarding because of how close you get to the community. And, you know, that's something that perhaps in hindsight I probably should have seen coming, but yet I didn't. And it's turned out to be just as rewarding as if I would have gone to pretty much anywhere else. Just the biggest benefit of being in Texas doing it in such an estate that has its stuff together when it comes to the regulations and some of that other stuff. I mean, it's, don't get me wrong, I miss the college basketball atmosphere of going to games at ASU pretty much whenever they were home. Like, don't get me wrong, I miss that. I miss that dearly. But I've really learned that the responsibility of people like myself and communities like this should not be taken for granted in a newspaper business that you look at it from the bigger scale is starting to die out. And I'm incredibly fortunate to be at a place where the paper is growing, it's getting better, it's under good ownership. That's probably the biggest key, in my opinion, the key to the good ownership we have at the Banner Press. And also the community's willingness to support the local media between us and our local radio station at KIDOHI. And pretty much the community support allows us to be with these people all the time, and perhaps even more myself, because I mean I'm everywhere. I mean, just this week alone, down in Friendswood, south of Houston, which Houston, Travis, a nightmare. Let's get that right. That's a nightmare. Then over in Rockdale for the basketball playoffs, which was Brenham's first playoff game in 7 years. They had a heck of a year. And now we're focusing really on baseball and softball. That's the bread and butter of this town. The baseball tradition, the softball tradition is the bread and butter here, right up there with football. They got tournaments in Santa Fe, even more south in French by a little bit, and way over west of Austin by Dripping Springs. And so the tournament year for me is when I get to go out and adventure a little bit. And that's become a real rewarding part of it as well.
That's great. I mean, it is the best way to put it. I mean, it's rewarding to hear how, I would say, Arizona State prepared you so that way, as you've made the transition to here in Texas, not only have you been able to start to plant your roots and just see how the landscape is, but you've been able to use it in a way that not only you've incorporated yourself in the city, but you've made it to where the athletics, like you said, people start to know you and just how you're able to make your impact daily and weekly and just how the different sports are. That's awesome. I mean, I'm glad that you're able to already start doing that. And like you said, with baseball and softball coming up, we can only expect it's going to be even better. And like you said, to seeing all the different players, I've got a feeling that, like, you, besides the one freshman running back you're already seeing getting the Big 12 offers, I wouldn't be surprised now coming up for baseball and football, you're probably going to have a few different players you're going to speak about for that.
Yeah, and there's already
Yeah,
there's already a couple of one of the softball seniors in a big senior class committed to Texas A&M, signed there not that long ago, and then another one of the underclassmen in baseball is also the same, and an A&M commit, and several other Division One players or Division One caliber players within that pool as well. Since when you get that baseball softball community like it is in Brenham, you're going to have that kind of stuff happen, and I'm really starting to see that firsthand from the high school level. Saw it in the summer at the little league level, but now I'm really starting to get the feel for it at that high school level.
That is great to hear and see. Now, I know that you're not as a big fan, but did you see what Caitlin Clark accomplished last on a Monday?
Yeah, that girl is unbelievable. I mean, it's just, I did watch several games in the NCAA tournament with Iowa last year. There's just a certain it factor that she has every time she takes the court. And it's just so hard to not watch, to be honest with you. It's so hard to not pay attention to what she's doing because she's making magic happen night after night. And that's probably one of the biggest things that, that women's college basketball has going for itself and why it's on such an upward trajectory. It has the star factor. And it has time to build the stars. That's something that college basketball on the men's side, whether it's guys going after 1 year to the NBA or just the constant reshuffling of the scene, you see it on the women's side too, but even more pronounced on the men's side. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that I think the men's side doesn't quite have. It doesn't have that star power that you can associate that face, that name with a team and instantly latch onto them. And Caitlin Clark, I think right now, is the best example of that in the current year. And she has just done so many unreal things. I mean, she is that dude. She is that girl, a star for sure.
100%. And I mean, for her, when she hit her record-breaking shot behind the logo, that was pretty nice. Because, I mean, back when I played Super Nintendo a long time ago, there was a game called NBA Jam, and you'd be making shots like that from back there. So to see her make one of those, I mean, she actually hit two of those when the game first started, because she scored the record setting within the first 3 minutes of the game, and then she had 42. I've heard that she's going to go for Pete Maravich's record, which is only, like, I think 166 points away. The funny thing is, Maravich did it in 3 years, where she's going to do it in four. She still has a COVID year if she wants to come back.
Isn't that something? I mean, it's gotten a little easier now because we're starting to see less and less of those people out of the COVID year available. But, man, women's college basketball would benefit so much from her coming back. Like, Caitlin Clark does not need to come back. Like, she's already proven herself so much. But, man, how much of an injection to the popularity of women's college basketball would it be for her to come back another year? I mean, that would just – it would take the sport – I think every single director in that sport would be over the moon to see that happen.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that just because, well, we'll still see. But between her and then I guess another person for LSU, Angel Reese, I'd say right now those – between them and then, say, UConn's Paige Beckers, those I would say are kind of the three upperclassmen, the sorts that you're kind of noticing, just because you had the freshman over at Notre Dame and the other freshman at USC who have both been tearing it up as well. So it's just kind of watching the seasons. But have you seen what South Carolina did the last two games at all?
No, but just kind of following with social media, haven't they been kind of struggling a little bit?
Yeah, actually, the last two games, they've gone into halftime down, and they've had to fight back and come from behind. I want to say their game against Georgia on Sunday, I believe they were down 8 to 12 points before they were able to come back in the third and fourth quarter. I mean, I'd say Dawn Staley this year, granted she had one of her players, Cardozo, I believe was her name, had to go to Brazil to play for the national team to set up for the Paris Olympics. But, I mean, they've been tested this week, and with them setting their now SEC record for games won in the conference, I think that they're going to have a little more struggles coming into the tournament, but just seeing how they're having to fight hard right now, it's good, but it's a challenge I don't know if she really expected.
Yeah, and like seeing some of these numbers, like this is not like South Carolina women's basketball. I mean, it just isn't. I mean the 66 points scored against Tennessee, the 70 against Georgia, like that's not like them. I mean, it really isn't. Like they've kind of lost something a little bit. And I don't know if it'll get exposed even more. I mean, Alabama coming up tomorrow, they're 20-7, mm-hmm. and they're not a bad team whatsoever. And then they got to face Tennessee again, who gave them troubles the first time around. But you kind of really wonder throughout these last four games just how much can they learn and apply. And they're gonna have to get better before the tournament, really. They're going to have to, because women's college basketball is no more just, all right, take the one seed, shoot it in the Final Four, and then make it up bracket from there. It's no longer like mm-hmm. that. It's gotten a lot more parity at the top, which is fantastic for the sport. That mm-hmm. that is terrific for women's college basketball to not be like that. And you're starting to see a little more upsets happen as well along the way. That's good for women's college basketball. It just is. We have a more compelling tournament like that. That's what you get. You get a more compelling tournament, you get more eyeballs. That's exactly what's happened here.
Well, I mean, that and for South Carolina, I think it is because of Cardozo. But when you're talking about sellouts, I don't know if you saw this stat, but for Caitlin Clark, every game that she's played in the Big Ten this year has either been a sellout or not a sellout, but the most people they've been able to get into the basketball stadium to watch her play. And so I know Paige Becker's already committed one more year to UConn, and so I'm waiting to see what Caitlin Clark does. But coming into the tournament, Ohio State for the women, they gave Iowa one of their two losses. It was Nebraska and Ohio State, two of the losses that Iowa's had in the Big Ten for the women. I'm curious to see how Iowa and Ohio State, when they play again, because Caitlin Clark and Cody McMahon, they're basically the two best players, you could say. I think that matchup is going to determine possibly the Big Ten Women's Player of the Year. If I know Caitlin Clark probably will get it no matter what, but if she doesn't, I think that matchup is going to be probably the biggest matchup for the Big Ten this year for the women.
Yeah, that's certainly going to be something really fun to watch. And just kind of over the men's side, Kentucky's in a little bit of a – they are getting down to it. I know you said you were kind of mm-hmm. keeping an eye on it. They are really getting down to it here in the final seconds here.
That, and I see that Penn State hit three free throws to upset Illinois. So then you see
that win probability chart went from way Illinois to shoo right to Penn State. That was one of those wild win probability charts where right at the end something crazy happens and it just gets them, and that is not a good loss for Illinois. Let's get that straight. That is not a good loss.
Not at all.
At all. Well, not for them. And, yeah, and also Dayton took one of those not so good losses at George Mason earlier today. That is one that pulls Dayton right back into the thick of what's become a really tight Atlantic 10 conference race between Dayton, Richmond, and Loyola Chicago. We're not expecting either of the other two to get into the NCAA tournament at large. They don't have the resume for it, but would be very intriguing if Dayton were to somehow fall in the A-10 tournament. That opens up a bid for a bid steal, and that would shrink the bubble by quite some margin. And for some of these other teams in that bubble, Seton Hall, Gonzaga, Ole Miss, Butler, you do not want to see Dayton losing quite like that whatsoever. And looks like something crazy just happened.
Yep, looks like LSU was able to make a shot just before the buzzer. They upset Kentucky 75-74.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Because, yeah, they thought that they had it, but that shot that was just made, it almost, like, you know how you see with a dunk? For North Carolina State back in the NCAA tournament. Number 15, he was able to, one of his teammates threw the ball to him, and he was able to just grab it real quick, just push it up. And they were able to get the game-winning shot right before the buzzer.
Wow.
I mean,
seems like something like that happens every day on basketball. My goodness, but
yeah, but I mean, that's great though.
Yeah, great for LSU, not for Kentucky. That is a really bad loss for Kentucky, and a Kentucky team that seems to just be spiraling downward. I mean, Kentucky had a pretty healthy halftime lead, and then they allowed 48 in the second half. I mean, they are just – something is happening there in Lexington that's not very good. When you consider their last few regular season games include Alabama coming up Saturday on CBS, Mississippi State, not too bad of a ball club themselves, and then finishing out the regular season with Tennessee – They are gonna have to improve. They are by no means safe. They get into the tournament by no means, especially if you consider Arkansas and Vanderbilt are lurking right there. If Kentucky trips up further early March, Kentucky, they're gonna have to take care of business. They really are.
Yeah, no, I've got a friend of mine who's a huge Kentucky fan, and he's even said that this year's team just doesn't have it is the best way that he's put it. And the thing that's funny for LSU, the women's basketball team was at the game. So when everyone rushed the court, he saw Angel Reese make sure to go over to where the players were.
Love to see that. Love to see that.
I mean, that's part of the greatness of this college basketball, just because you're seeing how upsets are happening at least once a week, and the only thing that they're having to work on now more is when they're rushing the court, how they're finally setting up like a little area for the players to go through, and then they can celebrate. Just because how it was in the beginning of the year, it was dangerous for how they would have to do it when they would rush the court. So seeing it how it is now, it still is great, and it just it makes it look even better for what's going to happen, not only to the rest of the regular season, but also for the tournaments, for the conference, and then the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think we're really starting to see the setup of another incredible March in the works. I mean, just within the last few days, you see teams like UConn go down, you see teams like Purdue go down. It really makes it seem like UConn and Purdue are still on a different level, in my opinion. Houston's right there with them. Houston's really getting slept on as far as best in the country is concerned. They got all the analytics saying they're number one. It's just they got to prove to the rest of the country. And they're doing their job. Let's get that right. They're doing their job. I mean, what they were able to pull off on Monday, getting a big win at home against Iowa State. I mean, Houston is absolutely doing their job, and they're doing it very effectively. They just have been waiting for a team that UConn to slip up, and they have. So we'll have to see how that ends up being for them going forward. I mean, as far as talks of a national championship, Houston's 100% getting slept on. In my opinion, just because not a lot of people are talking about Houston like they are the number one team. They're a definite number one seed, and everyone's latched on to that idea. But as far as them going on to win the whole thing, I think you are seeing a few people kind of sleeping on them a little bit, that they end up costing them a little bit. But I mean, really look at the scene of the sport right now, you could see that anyone from a 1 to a 3 could end up winning the national championship, as long as they got that right build. And most of these teams are built for it. Between the teams in the Big 12 that are in that scenario, got teams like Tennessee and North Carolina who very well could be primed to get on a run, get hot. But it's going to be one. I think we're setting ourselves up now for a really good March. And that's the biggest thing in college basketball. If you can get a really good March out of it, then you have done your job fantastically well. And I think we're setting ourselves up for a pretty darn good March here.
I would definitely agree with that, and ESPN right now is showing how Penn State, within the last 40 seconds, they were down 7 points before they came back to win, which that kind of scary right now, just how you're watching it change. But I've got a crystal ball question for you. If you had to pick the men's Final Four and the women's Final Four, who would you pick? I'll let you start with the men's first.
Yeah, and I'll be straight up with this. I don't know much about the women's game to try and predict a Final Four there. So I will be honest with you, that's not necessarily like my forte at the moment. But
that's
I see UConn getting there. How relative ease it could be, that has changed a little bit based on how they were against Creighton, knowing that they are capable of a stinker right now. But UConn has the pieces to. I think UConn has the best chance to defend the national championship that this sport's seen since Florida did it. Gosh, nearly 20 years ago now, which is crazy to say. Yep. It's been that long since that repeat champ. But I think they have the best shot to do it since Florida did it. I mean, the pieces are right there, and they are utilizing them to the best possible extent that you could possibly have. And it's real dangerous to say Purdue will get there just because of the recent history Purdue has had with upsets in the NCAA tournament. But what this Purdue team has found is that they've got some guards now to complement Zach Edey. And if they do their job and using that backcourt very wisely and not just relying on Edey, or even building something where Edey does not push to the perimeter on defense, that can also be another big struggle for at times. That's kind of how some of these upsets have happened, when you get guys like Edey pushed out of the perimeter on defense and they're not comfortable there. But Purdue has those pieces. They have to put them together, and it's a doable task, I think, for Purdue. They just have to put it together, and recent marches has been the case, but it would be really cruel to see Zach Edey get upset again in the NCAA tournament. That would be just be an absolutely cruel thing to say. Oh, where else am I going? I think Kansas has some of those pieces that you need to make a big run. They are a team that, like I mentioned earlier, they use the portal smartly, grabbing guys.
Hunter Jenkinson.
Yeah. They use that portal real smartly to get guys like him. And they have had their fair share of struggles in the Big 12, but that's going to happen in the Big 12. It's just a brutal conference, and really the only true stinker of a game, at least by margin that I see, was that game at Texas Tech this past Monday, the 12th. Other than that, their losses have been competitive. Sure, some losses you would not have liked to have taken, but this is a team that has beaten Houston on their home floor. It's a team that has wins against Baylor. And you look at what they did in the non-conference against Tennessee and UConn. They have the wins, and they are more than capable of putting something together. That'll be really fun to watch. I'll also go with that Houston team. It's a Houston team that they have gotten close and close and close. But now I think the big thing for Houston is they will be battle tested in that Big 12. There is no greater regular season battle than in the Big 12 in men's college basketball. And they have taken a few licks, but the licks have been few and far between. And they have looked good against quality opposition. I mean, what they did at Texas this past Saturday, beating them at home by 21, that's a big teller right there of what this team is capable of doing. And they have controlled the teams they should control. Maybe they don't have the best of non-conference to back it up, but when you play so many quality teams in a row, you're going to get the benefits. And you're looking at a Houston team that's going to play Baylor and a good Cincinnati team and a decent Oklahoma team. And UCS been a tough road test for some, and getting Kansas at home to end the regular season, they'll have their fair share of battles. And surely believe that Houston's right up there with the major contenders of the sport right now.
That's definitely true. I mean, for Houston, I did watch some of that game, and their one of their leading scorers, he was in the first half when he had 2 points. He was able to score 17 in the second half, which really propelled them to the win. And I mean, just seeing how they are, it's almost like at times awaking like a sleeping giant, just because as soon as they click, they're almost unstoppable depending on the situation. So, I mean, I definitely have Houston. I can't say that they're a dark horse, but they're definitely, they're looking good, that is for sure. So
they should be considered one of the favorites to get to the Final Four. They really are one of the favorites to get to the Final Four, and they should be among the popular picks to cut down the nets in Glendale when it's all said and done. And this is one of those teams that hasn't quite gotten that favorable of opinion compared to Purdue or UConn within that conversation, and they really should be getting that kind of consideration. They really should with what they've done.
That's definitely true. So before I have you do women's basketball, I'll make it easier. I'm only gonna have try to pick the two that'll play for the title. But Gino Auriemma this last week, he just passed Mike Krzyzewski for all time win. Do you know who has the most all time wins for men or women's basketball right now?
Gosh, not off the top of my head. Which is pretty sad to say.
It's okay. I had to look it up and also see ESPN so I could figure it out. It's actually Tara DeWeaver. And she's only about, I think, six games ahead right now. Tara DeWeaver, Stanford. So I don't think he's going to catch her only because, well, how she's been having stand play, but UConn right now, as much as I'd love to say that they're going to be a Final Four team, I see them more as a Sweet 16 or an Elite 8 team, just because with the injuries they have, I don't think that's going to go as well. But at least on my side, the three teams that I'm looking at, I'm thinking it's either going to be LSU. I can't really doubt Caitlin Clark. But until somebody is able to beat South Carolina this year, can't pick against South Carolina right now. Those are three teams that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, and women's basketball is a sport where perfect seasons are absolutely not a thing of the far and long past like it is in the men's. It's not an impossible feat. And South Carolina, they are going to have their work cut out for themselves. I mean, if they don't improve at the tournament, it's going to be increasingly difficult to pick them to cut down the nets. That's the major thing to keep an eye on for South Carolina. I mean, they let these last two games kind of affect them going down the stretch and into the conference tournament. It's going to be real hard to pick that Lady Gamecock team. So that's something to keep an eye on. But it's just hard to pick against what Caitlin Clark has going for her. And I really do believe that Iowa team has tried to use this year as a revenge year to try and get back to the national championship and cut down the nets after failing to do so a year ago. I think you're going to really see that. And I think you'll see a Hawkeye team that is locked in. And you're going to see an Iowa Hawkeye team that's going to garner a lot of fan support at those games. And especially at the Final Four. Kind of one of those players that you are rooting for to cut down the nets and win a national championship. And I will certainly be doing so myself. It would be so hard to see a player of her caliber fall that close and fall short yet again. So that is certainly one to keep an eye out for, as I believe the favorite outside of South Carolina, of course, to end up cutting down the nets. A lot of the stuff the Pac-12 has going for itself. Pac-12 has always been a great women's basketball league. But you have the teams like Stanford and USC and even Oregon State in the AP top 10. Colorado and UCLA are lurking just outside of it. That perhaps you see one of those teams or one or two of those teams try and make a run and make something happen, especially Stanford at the current moment in time. But I mean, outside of South Carolina, you look at that AP top 10 and everyone's got 3-4 losses. And it's certainly one of those sports where it's no longer a shoe-in Final Four or a shoe-in national champion. And that's great for the sport. I mean, that's terrific. Like, I can no longer just look at records and say, oh, look, there's my championship pick. That's fantastic for women's college basketball. And that's something that's been building for quite a while. And the sport's going to pay all kinds of dividends from it, I think. They are doing so now and will continue to do so down the road.
I couldn't have said it any better myself. But I mean, that was why I wanted to make sure that we could have you on today, so that way see exactly what you were thinking and just seeing who you were looking at as your picks, more or less. So if you had to pick a champion for both sides, who would you pick?
I would probably end up going with UConn in the men's. I still think UConn has some of those it factors that you need to be able to win games. And it's again, picking a repeat champion in men's college basketball is very dangerous. But if there is a team that can get the job done, I think that team is this year's UConn group. With some of those returners, with those key returners, a lot of teams have so many difficulties guarding Donovan Clingan on the inside, and their guards have been really getting – They are there as well. It's just so hard. Man, when I think of Purdue-UConn matchup, as unlikely as I believe it is, that would be so much fun to watch. Klingon versus Edie for the national championship. That might be one of the better front court national championship matches that we've gotten some time. I mean, that's kind of the dream front court matchup right there. Is it going to happen? I don't think so. But, man, we can all dream of that. And then, I mean, on the women's side, I mean, like we've been talking about that South Carolina team, until they lose, it's hard to see them not getting the job done because they've gotten the job done every time. But just with the way that Gamecock team is trending, you can start to see that star power, Caitlin Clark, and how she can take a game over, how teams deal with her. Some of the better teams in the country will be better equipped to deal with it than some of the lower and mid-tier opposition in the Big Ten. Let's get that straight. But it's gonna be real hard not to root for Caitlin Clark. I mean, that girl has everything going for star power, and just her charisma on the court is unreal and perhaps unmatched in all college basketball right now. The name power is there. Her skills are unbelievable. That's why she has so much name recognition. And she's the kind of player that can take over a national championship game and will her team to the national championship.
I can agree that I definitely see UConn doing it. I would hope that Iowa could get it done, but I'm just... It's tough for me to pick against South Carolina right now, but that's definitely my national championship matchup. So if I lose, that's okay. But either way, I think I can speak for you when I'm saying that just how the tournament's getting ready to stack up, it's exciting, and just watching how it's building up every week, it just means that the storylines are going to keep getting better and better each time.
Yeah, and don't sleep on those mid-major conference tournaments either come March. I mean, some of those games are some of the better ones you'll find in all of March, the mid-major conference tournaments getting those – I mean, as early as the first round or quarterfinals in some of those conferences, there are some games that will just pop up out of nowhere, and they are just terrific battles for seasons that are on the line. And those are some of the best March games, the mid-major conference tournaments, when you know two teams are fighting for their season and for a chance to dance. That's some of the best basketball you can find, I think, in March. And people will 100% sleep on that. But just make that clear that it is definitely something that if I had unlimited amount of time, I would be watching a lot more of it. Unfortunately, these darn Cubs and Cubettes keep me busy everywhere across the state of Texas. But whenever I get a chance to, you know, sit down, I'm going to have to really start to really get into it, because I was great in November, kind of tailed off, but now it's really getting down to it, and you're going to see a lot of exciting basketball games here.
Yeah, no, I do appreciate at times the college, the mid-major tournaments more than the NCAA tournament, just because I do make my bracket, but while I can pick them, my bracket may not do very well. Watching how those tournaments are, and if you even try to pick a bracket for those, just how the competition, it feels like it ramps up even more for them. But, I mean, that's what I'm looking forward to as well. And actually, they're showing right now for Dayton and Mason, just because it looks like it was at Eagle Bank Arena tonight where Dayton lost. So, like you said, yeah, that's a loss that they really couldn't afford to have, especially because the A-10 at times, that is one of the conferences where you always see a team that usually makes it into at least into the round of 32. So, I mean, that's why I just fingers crossed about that. But, Nick, if we were going to try to get in touch with you outside of here, what would be the best way to do so?
So that place would be X, formerly known as Twitter. Thanks, Elon. Don't know why you ever changed that name. At Hodel Sports, the best place for sure to find me. Obviously, keeping you up to date on everything with the Brenham Cubs and the Brenham Cubettes, but also the Burton Panthers and Lady Panthers. That small town also has a good tradition, of, particularly in baseball. Younger teams there, but they will still have their moment in Conference 2A. And you can follow me there. And if you can bear all the constant updates, because it's right now it's stuff every day, pretty much it seems like. That is definitely the best place. And I will likely be tweeting a little more college basketball in March as I begin to really take in a lot more of these games. So you definitely give me a lot more from me on the sport as we get closer to cutting down the nets.
That sounds great. Nick, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. If you're going to find me, well, I haven't posted on X in about 4 months. Mine is Alan F. West, or you can find me on Facebook or Instagram at alan.west.46. Hopefully, Nick, we will have a chance to get you on either before we do, like, say, a March Madness show, or maybe before the championship, depending on how your schedule is. But either way, I thank you for your time, and once again, congratulations for graduating at the end of last year, and looks like the Brenham banner, I know that they're lucky to have you, and just seeing how you're making a difference for them already. It's a pleasure, and once again, thanks so much for coming on the Top 25 Rundown, and hope everybody has a great night, okay?
Thank you.